Hey everyone, this is Roman Prokopchuk, and this is the Digital Savage Experience Podcast. Today I have with me Paul Fortune. He was born with cerebral palsy, and it was so severe that the doctors told his mom that he would never be able to walk. Thank goodness for a wonderful mom and a great mindset. That wasn't his story. He was able to overcome it and is now able to live a very active life. It wasn't easy, however, to get to that point. Today, as a mindset coach, Paul shares his story with his clients to help them rewrite their own stories to go after their true dreams and desires. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Roman. I appreciate it.
So obviously that's a buildup, but tell me a little bit about your journey. How did you get to where you are today? Kind of, some of the things that you've had to pivot along the way and, made you who you are today.
Yeah, as mentioned in my bio, I suffer from cerebral palsy. And if your viewers don't know what cerebral palsy is, it's lack of oxygen to the brain at labor. And as a result of this lack of oxygen to the brain at labor, it can leave one side of the body paralyzed. It can affect your speech. And these things are permanent. They don't go away. So when I was born, I wasn't moving the right side of my body very much. And naturally, my mother was very concerned about that. So she took me to the doctors to get testing done. And that's when I was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. And this first doctor thought it was so severe that he thought I would never, ever be able to walk. And it would be a good idea when I got to a certain age to get me ready to be in a wheelchair because that was going to be my life going forward. I've had many conversations with my mom about this. And naturally, she was devastated by hearing that news, cried herself to sleep that night. But she said the next day, when she woke up and got me ready for the day, I'm an infant. I can't talk at this point. She said that I gave her a look, if to say, "Mom, don't let this be my story. I want to walk." And that mama bear inside of her started raging. And she got a second opinion, a third opinion, a fourth opinion, a fifth opinion, finally found a physician willing to help. And with this physician's help and me doing physical therapy 5 to 6 times a week and my mom's unrelentless attitude to make sure I was walking between age 2 and 3, a feat that 4 of the doctors said it was impossible. And I was doing, which obviously was huge. Now, I really don't remember that much because I was very, very young. But I do remember being put into soccer roughly when I was about 5 years old. And at the time, I probably could run about 25 to 50 yards before my leg would give out. So basically, I'm standing there on the soccer field while kids are playing soccer around me and getting teased. Nobody really wanted to hang out. And I was really getting fed up with playing soccer on this team. But I'll never forget what my mom said to me that day. It stuck with me to this day, this very day, in my personal life and in my business life. I said, "Mom, I don't want to play soccer anymore. I quit. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not having fun. I just want to quit." And my mom saying, "Paul, if you do not want to play soccer anymore, that is fine. But you need to honor your commitments. So you need to finish out that soccer season. And if you don't want to play soccer after that, that is fine." And that's exactly what has happened. I'm 42 years old, and I haven't played soccer since that season. But I took that lesson with me to this day in my personal life and in my business life. I honor my commitments. And after that, I'll evaluate if I want to continue doing it. And it's just been huge for me. But after that soccer season, I got a huge, huge, huge break. I got surgery on my right foot to tighten up the tendon, to give me a little bit more spring in my step. And this was a game changer. I didn't know how big of a game changer it was. But I switched schools around this time, so I'm about first grade. And I will never forget my first day of PE, physical education. We did our stretches, and then the teacher says, "Okay, guys, run a lap." And I'm thinking to myself, "Here we go again. I'm going to run 25 to 50 yards. I'm going to have to stop. These kids are going to see that, and they're going to start teasing me." But because of the surgery, it was different. I was able to go past that point where I normally have to stop. And I remember saying to myself, "Come on, Paul, come on, come on." And I finished the lap with the other kids. On the outside, I kept it cool. And on the inside, I was like, "Yes, yes, yes." The first time in my young life where I fit in, I didn't stand out. I was just one of the kids. And things did get easier for me after that surgery, but I wouldn't consider it easy. My parents got divorced roughly when I was about 12 years old. So I had to switch schools. And that's a tough age to switch schools, period, with no disability. Kids are going through hormonal changes. They've already formed their cliques. A lot of these kids have been going to school with years and years together, and they don't have time for anybody new. So just being a new kid alone is going to be tough. But I'm a new kid who walks with a little bit of a limp and holds his right arm a little bit differently, so it was even tougher for me. I couldn't make any friends with the school. I was getting bullied, teased, spit on, you name it, they did it to me. While this was going on, I was raised Catholic, so my mom wanted me to go to Catholic high school. So I had to take an assessment test to see where they were going to place me when I got to high school. Well, I must have bombed it, because when I met with the principal and my mom, the principal says to the both of us that she's going to put me at the lowest level possible. She does not expect much from me. I don't seem like I'm going to be college material. After one test, this principal says this to the both of us. And so now I think I'm stupid. I'm going back to school that I'm getting bullied and teased at. I'm crying myself to sleep at night, most nights going, why me? Why do I have to go through this? Why can't I just be like everybody else? I don't know what came over me, Rowan, but the start of eighth grade, I was just sick and tired of feeling angry and sad all the time. I knew deep down those weren't my go-to emotions, but because of the environment I was in, those were the emotions I was showing most of the time. So I thought, what if I try to set a goal for myself, focus in on the goal, and that will help me distract me from all that outside noise? And I thought, well, what could my goal be? And at the time, I loved baseball. So I said, what if I try to make my varsity baseball team in high school? So I started playing fall ball, winter ball, spring ball, and if I wasn't doing that, I was throwing a tennis ball against the wall. I was doing this constantly. And while I'm going through this journey, a coach comes up to me and says, Paul, you play a lot of baseball. Do you have any goals with this? And at the time, I didn't want to tell him my goal was to make my varsity baseball team because I didn't want him to laugh at me. Somebody with cerebral palsy making a baseball team? Not going to happen. So I said, no, I just like to play. But this coach kept asking me that question. And one day, he caught me at a weak moment, and I just blurted out I wanted to make my varsity baseball team. And I was bracing myself for him to laugh at me. But he didn't. He paused for a second, and he said, that's doable. And I'm like, what? That's doable to make the team? He goes, yeah, absolutely it's doable. But you have to have other people keep you accountable for this goal. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? He goes, after practice tomorrow, you're going to tell the team that that's your goal. And I'm like, no. I don't want to tell the team that's my goal. They just started accepting me. They're going to make fun of me again if I tell them that. They go, Paul, there's going to be times in this journey that you're not going to be up to it. And you're going to need your friends and family to pull you up when you're not feeling the best. And they need to motivate you. So I reluctantly agreed. The next day after practice, I went for the team, and I told the team that that was my goal. And I was bracing myself for them to laugh at me. I was shaking. But they didn't laugh at me either. They started clapping for me. And I know this now. I didn't know this when I was going through this journey, but I started sending a different energy out towards these kids. I started gaining more confidence in myself, my shoulders back, my head up. And as a result of this new energy I was sending out to these kids, they started sending a different energy back towards me. Instead of bullying and teasing me, they started rooting for me. So my high school career was much, much different than my middle school career, all because of my energy shift. And that alone is the win. But the cherry on top of the whole thing was I was able to make my varsity baseball team as a junior and a senior. In my senior year, I pitched a three-hit shutout. They poured the Gatorade on me, and I felt so alive. I felt so good about myself. I graduate high school, and I start to really reflect on that goal that I set for myself. As I told you before, the reason why I set that goal for myself was just to ignore the noise. I really didn't think I was going to make the team, but I was able to make that team. So I started thinking about what that principal said to me years earlier about not being college material. See, all through high school, I pretty much mailed it in. I just did enough to stay eligible to play baseball because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, what's the use? I'm not college material. Why waste time? Just do enough to get by and move on with yourself. So my grades weren't that great. But I thought, well, if I made this goal and I was able to make my varsity baseball team, why can't I set another goal for myself to say that I am college material? So I enrolled into a junior college because that was the only place that would accept me at the time. I got myself a math tutor. I got myself a tutor for other subjects. I went to the math lab. I did everything necessary to increase my grade point average. And due to this hard work, I took my barely a 2.0 all the way to 3.5, where I was able to transfer to a four-year university, graduate, and become college material. And I still wanted to go back to that principal and say, see, you were wrong. I was college material. But then I thought about it. I should probably thank this principal because all through college, all I did was hear her voice saying that I'm not college material. And all through college, my next thought was, I'll show you that I am. So I just forgiven her. I move on. I'm 22, 23 years old. I have no life experience. I have no idea what the heck I want to do with my life. And I had a family friend who was a CEO of a small bank. And he said, hey, Paul, we're hiring mortgage loan officers. Would you like me to hire you? And I'm like, hey, I got nothing going on. Yeah, let's try this. And I was pretty excited because it was my first time having a real job where I had to wear nice clothes to work. So I was excited to get to this job. But when I got there, no one wants to talk to me. I'm sitting alone at lunch. I'm getting shunned. And I'm like, I haven't felt this way since middle school. What the heck is going on? And I quickly realized what the issue was. Everybody there knew that I knew the CEO of the company. So it wasn't because of my talents. It's because of who I knew. So what they were going to do is they were going to chew me up and spit me out because I didn't belong there. But I was determined to prove them wrong. So I dug in. I had a great attitude. I didn't complain about the workload. And from afar, I was observing what the top loan officers did in the company since they didn't want to talk to me. I'll never forget my first day of wanting to go out in the field and get loans for the first time. I had my rate sheets ready and was about to walk out the door. And my family friend CEO stops me and goes, what are you doing, Paul? And I go, I'm ready to go. I'm going to get loans. And he's like, no. Let's get you a little bit more training and we'll send you out in a few months. I'm like, no. I got this. And he was absolutely right. I needed way more training. I was falling flat on my face left and right. But months would go by. And I started to realize what value I could add to these clients. And so I started bringing in loans and more loans and more loans. And 2 years later, I became a top producer at this bank. And the people who didn't want to talk to me when I first got there are now coming to me with questions on how I was able to turn things around at such a fast clip. And I really, really enjoyed what I did. I was living for Mondays. I loved Mondays. I couldn't wait for the work week. I just thought it was the greatest thing. I get to drive around for work, selling, where other people have to be in a cubicle. I was just so grateful to have this job. And then 2008, 2009 hit. The economy tanked it. And that whole bank went belly up. And I had to get another job. And that job went belly up. And this happened 5 or 6 times. I was really losing the luster of being in the mortgage industry. And a lot of these companies I was working for, I wasn't living for monies anymore. They were just awful companies. Matter of fact, on Sunday, I call it the Smunday Blues. And it was around Sunday afternoon where I stopped enjoying the weekend and they started stressing out about what I had to do on Monday and I hated it. But I'll never forget the last place I was at, they brought in this motivational speaker to speak to us, to motivate us. And at the time I'm like, dude, I'm a good salesperson. Why do I have to go to this nonsense to motivate me? I'm self-motivated. I don't need this. But for whatever reason, I kept an open mind and I went to the event. And the guy blew me away. The guy was tremendous to the point where I went to the guy after the event to tell him how great of a job he did. And he allowed me to pick his brain for a minute. And he told me he also did life coaching. I'm like, what the heck is that? And he explained that to me. And I'm like, you know, maybe I want to get into that. So on the off time of doing the mortgage stuff, I was getting my coaching certificate. And I was telling people that's what I wanted to get into. And most people are humoring me and saying, hey, Paul, you know, go ahead and save the world, but before you do that, bring in a couple loans, will you? So nobody's really taking me seriously. But I started getting my website up, my social media up, and the legal team that I was working with at the time gets wind of what I was doing, and they're like, what is this? And I was completely transparent. I told them mortgage loans is going to be my full-time job, and this is my side gig. And they're like, well, this could be a conflict of interest. We'll get back to you. And they got back to me with this 5-page report of what I couldn't say. And I looked at this report. I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to make any traction in the coaching world if I follow this to the T. So I thought I had to make some changes. So for a year, I didn't do any coaching, just did mortgage stuff. I paid down all my debts, did everything necessary to take the leap of faith. And a year later, I quit. And people are looking at me like I'm crazy. What in the heck are you doing? You're a loan officer. You just made President's Club. Why would you quit? And I'm like, I got to try this. I want to be a coach. And like, this is pie in the sky nonsense. You'll be back. And I go, maybe so, but I just got to give it a try. So for a while, I thought they were going to be right because I wasn't getting any traction in the coaching world. I was getting no speaking gigs. I was getting nothing. And I was doing some soul searching on why that was. And I thought, how do I expect people to be vulnerable with me if I'm not vulnerable with them? See, the story I just told you about having cerebral palsy, I wanted to bury that story. I wanted to tell a soul about that story because all through growing up, I just wanted to fit in. I didn't want to stand out. I just wanted to be like everybody else. So just the thought of bringing that up, I would be near in tears, but I thought only way I'm going to make traction of it is if I own my own story. So I started going podcasts. I started telling people anywhere I could, I would tell people about my story. And at first it was real shaky and I had a lot of emotion behind it, but I kept saying the story over and over again where it took the emotion out. And I remember my first client ever saying, "Paul, I don't have cerebral palsy, but of X, Y, and Z, I'd be honored if I could hire you as my coach." And we've been building from there, coaching clients, speaking gigs, and it brings me to present day talking with you, Roman.
Yeah, well, obviously that was a lot in terms of your journey, but I feel like not getting a first opinion in most things is a worthwhile cause, especially you know, when it comes to health and, like you said, you know, being in school and people doubting you and things of that nature. I remember actually my brother was in elementary school and they tried to put him in special education, not because he wasn't intelligent, because the teacher had some kind of weird, she didn't like him, like straight up, she didn't like him. And it was like, I don't know what it was, but then he ended up actually getting a master's degree from Columbia. So it's one of those things where it's like, people want to put you into a box, but that doesn't necessarily you know, define you, whether it's your intelligence or your health, and getting a second opinion. And like you said, kind of transitioning to having somebody in your corner that keeps you accountable, or that's there and kind of, you know, sticks up for you. Like, you know, to begin with your life in terms of your mother and not giving up on the, you know, the fact that you would be able to walk, and, you know, keeping that until it actually, you know, materialize and happen, and then moving forward. So I think it's important. And then when you, you know, get older, I think it's important to have people accountable, or have you accountable, because, you know, a lot of people have, you know, dreams or, you know, business goals, or even in their personal life, they want to change relationships. But if nothing or no one keeps you accountable, it's kind of like a wish. You know, it's one of those things where maybe you go, let's say, on YouTube and you watch a really inspirational video, and then you get all amped up, but then there's no action. So it's one of those things when you have somebody in your corner, I think it makes it that much better in terms of to materialize an actual action after the fact.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the medical field, a lot of people feel like if a medical expert says something, it's Bible. Like, you can't go against it. And that's absurd. You know, it's science, and science needs to be challenged. There's experiments over and over again to make it better and better and better. It's never going to be perfect. So it's important, if you get a medical diagnosis and it's extremely negative, it's important to get other opinions, like you said, because there could have been something that's missed. There's nothing perfect in the science world. So if you get a diagnosis that's grim, make sure you get other opinions about that. Don't just stop with that one opinion.
Yeah, I think like that's applicable, and people should do that in every part of their life. You know, a lot of people are introverted and may not want to speak up in certain situation and hold things as, you know, written in stone truths, like, you know, things like, let's say your car broke down. I mean, you logically go to a few places to get different estimates to really understand and see what each person says, and you know, other things as well. I think career-wise, it's one of those things where you need to ask and not be afraid to ask, also ask questions, or not even settle. So, you know, you apply for a job and you get an offer. You should always negotiate, regardless if you get a no, because you never know. I mean, I've hired people in different roles where there was a salary range, you know, and they ended up undercutting themselves, and they said, you know, why didn't I get this? Because you didn't ask for it. You know, it's not on me to say, if you're asking for 50K, I'm going to give you, well, no, now you're getting 100K. Like, you have to take that initiative and ask. And, you know, from that point of my career, regardless of what the role was, I would always ask, and sometimes they would negotiate other things. So, okay, we can't give you that amount, but then we can give you a potential higher title, more PTO, a better plan in terms of 401k or what have you. Like, you never know what will come out of something if you don't, you know, ask, and you don't settle for a specific kind of effect, regardless of what it is in life.
Oh, no question about it. You got to be the biggest advocate for yourself, because if you're not going to do it, nobody else will. I think that is huge in life. We got to, before you do anything, before you have goals or any of that nature, you got to build that foundation. You got to have that self-esteem within yourself that you are worth what you are worth. And if you have that great self-esteem, you can go into situations and negotiate or whatever it is, you can advocate for yourself. But if you don't have that strong self-esteem, it's very, very hard to negotiate for yourself to go out there. So it's very important that you invest in yourself so that you can go after the things that you really want to go after in life.
Yeah. And I think investing in yourself, a lot of people fall short. I mean, they're willing to purchase, you know, a material thing that is only gives you a dopamine hit in terms of I have this shiny new thing and it wears off automatically, but they refuse to pay the same amount in terms of, you know, mentors, coaches, masterminds, you know, anything in terms of self-improvement, because the best thing you can do for yourself is, you know, get better in any aspect of your life. And that should be a goal in terms of always bettering yourself or being better than the person you were, you know, yesterday. So I feel like a lot of people will look beyond or, you know, will buy 2 cups of Starbucks a day, which is, you know, at this point, I don't even know with inflation, probably like, you know, $10 to $15, and then multiply that out by a year where they could have done X, Y, Z or hired professionals to keep them accountable or, you know, went to events, to conferences in terms of, you know, transitioning to whatever they wanted to transition or be who they wanted to be and chase a goal or a dream. But, you know, they really didn't have that kind of mindset shift.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes you can't measure that, and I think that's the issue. Like, you can't measure it dollar from dollar when you get, you know, self-development. It doesn't equate to, okay, I'm going to make this amount of money because I'm getting this much, you know, coaching or whatever. You can't look at it that way. You got to look at it as something that's bettering you inside. I mean, the greatest thing that we could do for ourselves is feel good about ourselves in the present moment. The past is gone. And the future is not guaranteed. So if you say to yourself, "Oh, I would be happy if I got this house, or if I got this, or that, or that," and the things like you said, it's just a shiny object for a few moments. Yeah, you might be happy for a little bit, but when it wears off, you're going to be exactly the same as you are right this moment. So if you want to be happy, you got to worry about your happiness right this moment. What can you do to be happy right now? And the easiest way to do that is gratitude. What is going well in my life right this moment? I have a practice I do with my clients. I have them do, you know, a gratitude journal. I have them write down something that they're grateful for every day, and I want them to pick something new. I know it's sometimes hard, but it starts your day on the right foot, because it trains your mind to start looking for the good in the day. Like, you get something on your phone. You mentioned Starbucks. Maybe you get on something on your phone that says free Starbucks today. You know, because, you know, for whatever reason, you're like, oh, okay, the day's getting better and better and better, because you can go the opposite way, right? You could be having that negative mindset. You could be driving to work and you get a flat tire and go, this would happen to me. Things like this would happen to me. I would get a flat tire. This always happens. And I would say to that individual, yes, bad things do happen to you because you're looking for it. Your mind is focusing on that. It's just like when you buy a new car. You're driving the car around. Now all of a sudden you see that same car you bought all over the place. You didn't see it before you bought the car, but you see it now. And the same thing with a positive and negative mindset. Your mind goes with what you're thinking about. So if your mind's thinking about positive stuff, your mind's going to say, oh, Paul likes positive. Okay, I'm going to show him positive. Oh, Paul likes negative. Okay, I'm going to show him negative. So it's all where your mind takes you, and it's huge. And it starts with gratitude. And if you start your day with gratitude, it helps your mind look for the positive.
Yeah, I agree. I just actually had someone on recently where they do something similar. They'll write down 5 to 10 things, you know, first thing in the morning that they're grateful for in a post-it, and they won't repeat it. So now at this point, they've been doing it for a few years, so it takes several minutes. But the caveat is, if you write down a person, you have to contact that person and tell them why, you know, you're grateful for them. And basically said, yeah, it opens up, like, you know, new dimensions of relationships where it's like, you know, I appreciate you. I'm grateful for you. You know, I enjoyed our lunch, you know, 2 years ago when I happened to, you know, be in San Diego. We should catch up and, you know, get lunch at you know, another time. And that person, like, it really appreciated it. And that kind of like refreshed those relationships. So like, I've heard that a lot. And in terms of gratitude, also, a lot of people don't truly understand, you know, what they have in their lives, especially in the Western world, in the US. Yes, there's a lot of problems, you know, certain things happening, politics, this, that, or the other. But if you travel around the world and actually like go in the neighborhoods, non-tourist zones, how people are actually living, what they're actually living their life on in terms of earnings and what they're actually, you know, grateful for with having very little, but still optimistic and positive, it puts things in a new perspective. So I had the, you know, opportunity and, you know, good fortune to travel, you know, more so than most people, and really go to areas like that. Every time I get back, it makes me appreciate what I have that much more as well.
Oh, no question about it. And another thing that can get you out of your funk, you mentioned like different people having different problems, helping somebody else. That is one of the easiest ways to get yourself out of that funk, is somebody's in need and you help them. It just changes your chemistry, and then you feel better about yourself. So one of the easiest ways to do it is it reach out. If somebody needs help, help them, and that will help you in the long term. So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, you go to different countries and you see how some people live in it, and it's extremely, extremely sad. And it just makes you feel so grateful. Like you talked about being in the Western world where, you know, we have, like you said, we have problems, but these are first world problems. They're not third world problems. And we need to step back sometimes when we're having these arguments about X, Y, and Z. I mean, look at what we're arguing about compared to somebody's arguing about having clean water, you know, being able to drink water. I mean, that's a real problem. You know, what we do with our tax code, you know, that's a problem, but it's not survival mode.
Yeah, I agree. And in terms of when you made that leap, obviously from banking to coaching, how long have you thought about it before doing it? Because for me personally, there's things in my life where I was hesitant and scared to do. And if I had the chance, I would go back to either do them because I didn't do them or do them sooner. So like starting a podcast, I probably would have started like 5 years prior to what I actually started. I think, you know, as human beings, we go in a kind of a survival mode. And if we're comfortable, we don't want to like rock the boat. And then if we want to take a leap, you know, maybe even a calculated leap, it doesn't have to be kind of like, let's burn the ships and not go back to, you know, what we were doing. Because, you know, oftentimes if you set yourself up for something new and build a framework, if it doesn't work, you can pivot or go back or so on and so forth. But, you know, human beings, when they're ready to take like a, you know, a big step, they start second guessing themselves, regardless if it's warranted or not. So, you know, why are you doing this? You're making 6-7 figures. There's all this uncertainty. And a lot of people will listen to that little voice before they make that decision. So if, you know, you would have done it earlier, would you, or were you thinking about it earlier? And, you know, how did you kind of overcome that potentially little voice?
Well, There was a lot of struggle with that. So as far as doing the leap of faith, I'm not really, I don't regret on when I did it. I think I did it at the right time. I think I think having that legal team telling me that put me into gear. I mean, I don't think if the legal team told me that, I would probably answer your question differently, but the legal team put me into gear where I wanted to get my things together and make that leap of faith. And I don't regret taking that year because I paid off my debts. I actually paid off my mortgage. So I don't regret that at all. So I think I did it at the right time. Now, while I was going through it, while I was struggling with it, there was a good 2.5 years where I was struggling in the coaching world. I really wasn't making any money. I didn't have to make as much money because I didn't have a mortgage payment or a car payment. But obviously, I still have other bills to pay. So I started doing deliveries. And that was most humbling thing that I ever did, because I was making 6 figures in the mortgage industry, and I was pretty good at what I did. And now I'm making what, I don't know, 15, 20 bucks an hour. And I would be delivering food to people that I went to high school with. And they'd be looking at me like, oh man, times must be tough for you, Paul. And I really didn't have time to explain what I was doing because I had to get in my car and make other deliveries because I had to make some money. I remember there was times in my car I was crying, going, what in the heck am I doing? I made all this money in the mortgage industry. It wasn't that bad. Why don't I go back? But then I started putting myself back in that situation where I would go back to that mortgage and just thought to myself, I would be so mad at myself if I didn't give it a true go. I just thought, I didn't know what a true go meant, but there was going to be a time where I'm going to say to myself, okay, I gave it all I got and it didn't work out. And I could live with myself with that. And I really have a formula on what that looked like, but I knew at that point I wasn't there just yet. So I just said, you know what? I would really regret it if I go back. So I just want to keep going. And like I mentioned to you, things did start opening up when I started to be more vulnerable with my story and people understood where I'm coming from. And they're like, oh, okay. I get why he wants to be a coach. Now I understand that. Now I want to reach out to Paul because I feel he understands me on a different level than I did before. So, yeah. So to answer your question, it was extremely, extremely, extremely hard. So basically what happened was I was doing less and less delivering to the point where I didn't have to do it anymore. That felt good. And now, you know, I don't know what the future holds. Right now I'm doing really well, but you know, I don't know what the economy or anything like that, that might change and that might change my structure and I might have to go back and I have to be humble enough to say, you know, yeah, you had some great success for a few years here in coaching, but you know, if things change, you're going to have to change too. So I always have to remind myself of where I've come from because it could change in a heartbeat and I can't have this ego where like, oh, you know what? I've done so well at coaching. There's no way I can do this now. No, I mean, I constantly have to pivot and I constantly have to keep that ego in check.
Yeah, I agree. I think life has a way of humbling you. So, you know, when you're on top, a lot of the time things start happening. So, you know, if you're doing exceptionally well professionally, oftentimes things start falling apart in your personal life, you know, health, other things, you know, family members. So regardless of like how high you are, it's always, like you said, kind of planning and potentially pivoting in the future because you never know what the future holds. And, you know, just because you're in a good period in your life doesn't mean that will, you know, last forever. So, you know, you kind of jumped in banking in 2008 during that recession and then, you know, started getting other jobs because obviously the economic climate, I graduated around that time as well. So I interned with the Secret Service. I graduated with a degree in criminal justice and then looked forever for a job because nobody was hiring. And then somebody gave me an opportunity to get into digital marketing. Actually at the gym, they opened their trunk and handed me a packet about search engine optimization. And I kind of was like, all right, well, I have nothing to lose. Let me run with it. And that kind of opened up a 15-year career in digital marketing. So it's one of those things where you should take advantage of the opportunities you're dealt because you never know where they'll take you or set you up for something else. Just because, you know, like you were in, you know, banking loans doesn't mean that's your trajectory for the rest of your life, but it may open up other avenues and then may set you up financially to be able to pivot other things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Being in mortgage sales is extremely helpful in the coaching world because I don't know if you know any of your viewers are looking to be a coach. One of the things that you have to be good at is selling and marketing. You know, you can't just. It would be great if I could just get clients and I could just coach, and that would be awesome. But that's not reality. You got to be really good at selling yourself and marketing yourself. And I think that is huge. And I got a lot of education on that on the sales side. So one of the things that has helped me in my life, in my personal life, and in my business life is I'm not afraid of hearing no. You know, you talked about it earlier about if you don't ask, you don't get, and that's absolutely true. And if you're not worried about hearing no, then you know, that is such a weight lifted off your shoulders. If you're not afraid of hearing no, then, you know, it doesn't bother you. And then you move on. You don't take it personally. You go, okay, well, great. Okay, that's fine. I'd rather hear a no let me get back to you. I hate let me get back to you because, you know, just tell me no. If you don't want to do it, tell me no, you know, because then now I'm following up with you and this and that, and now you're ghosting me. You know, it's like, you didn't have to do that. You could just said, no, I'm not interested, and I wouldn't take it personally, move on, you know, rather than, you know, string me along for a month telling me, you know, this or that, this or that. Say no, you know. It's just easier if yes or no, you know. If there is a maybe, maybe, but, you know, most of the time people just don't want to hurt your feelings. And it's like, you don't want to do it, just say no. That's how I do it. That's how I do it. You know, if I'm always willing to listen to people because of the fact I'm in the sales world. I allow people to pitch me. And matter of fact, I like it because then maybe I can use that in my own business. If somebody has a good pitch, I'll at least listen to it. But like, if I don't think it's going to benefit me, I tell them at the end, I appreciate the time, but it's not for me. No.
Yeah, I agree. So what's one piece of advice you could leave with the audience, personal or professional?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say is to give yourself grace. I mean, we beat ourselves up so much, and you mentioned it before. We have these this voice in our head that just constantly is drowning you with negativity. Just know that everybody has that voice, and what we have to do is give ourselves grace that, you know, not every day is going to be a day where you're going to be wanting to go out 110. You know what I mean? There's days where you're going to be like, I don't have it in me. And you shouldn't feel guilty of, you know, if you want to watch Netflix or you want to sit on the couch. You know, there's so many self-development. I'm addicted to self-development. And there's some stuff that is good, some stuff that I don't like. You know, I don't like the self-development. They're like, you got to jump in the pool, swim. And if you don't do that, you're a loser. I can't stand that message. Or if somebody says, well, I used to be this way and now I'm immortal and I don't have pain anymore. I'm like, What are you talking about? We all have pain the rest of our lives. I don't like that when people say, "Oh, I used to be, I used to be human, and now I don't have emotions anymore." That's silly too. So know that we're all a work in progress the day we die, and we got to give ourselves grace. And if there's a day where you just don't feel it, don't beat yourself up for it. Lay low, and then evaluate yourself the next day. Maybe you needed to rest. Maybe your body's telling you you needed to rest. So give yourself grace and make sure that you think about what you're grateful for. That is huge, huge, huge. When you're having a rough go of it, I know that's the toughest time to do it, but that's the best time to do it. What is going well in my life? There's always, always, always something that you could look to that you can be grateful for.
Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of being self-aware and understanding that no one is super motivated 100% of the time. What you see on, you know, social media or, you know, other platforms, it's a highlight reel. So, you know, how people are doing this, you know, for example, I guess I'll use, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk in business. You know, how is he putting out so much content? How is he so energetic? Well, he has a personal branding team of 20 people that, you know, pumps content out. So regardless of what you do as one individual, you will never meet that. So kind of staying in your own lane, not really comparing yourself, like you should still kind of want to achieve things that other people are achieving if that's your goal as well, and seeing how they're doing it, but don't kind of like get out of your lane. So I think it's important and humbling to do that as well.
Yeah, and have patience. Not everything that you want is going to be right now. You know, it might take you years to get to where you want to go, but you got to enjoy the journey, enjoy the progress. That's what it's really about. The end result's cool, but it's the journey that's taking you there. That's the meat of it. Real quick, I have this analogy. When you have a kid and he's building the Legos, he's having most fun when he's building the Legos. He might have fun after he built it to show his brother and sister or his parents what he built. But when he's actually having the most fun is actually when he's creating something. And that's what we got to do. We got to enjoy building the Legos, because that's where you're going to have the most fun, and that's where you're going to have the most growth. The end result's cool, but it's about the journey, because it can take you to different places you never thought you'd go.
Yeah, I agree. So I really appreciate you stopping by today. Can you let the audience know how they could find you or anything else you have going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website, It's a call to action.coach, and I actually have an ebook on there on how you can rewrite your story and how I was able to rewrite my story. It's free on there. All you have to do is download it. Another way you can get in touch with me is I have a Facebook group called Rewrite Your Story, and it's people from all over the world that come together and they share their stories with us, and there's no judgment, only support. We're there to support each other. And once a month, we have a live virtual meetup where we get together and we allow a space for everybody to share what's been going on in their lives. And we're there as a group, very positive group. We lift each other up. A lot of times I'll have a special speaker that will talk about a various subject. Like I'm going to have somebody come on right now to talk about how they lost 150 pounds. And it was more than just a diet. It was a mindset shift. So a lot of fun stuff. So if you want to check that out, Rewrite Your Story Facebook group, love to have you.
Awesome. Thanks again for stopping by.
I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity.